How's that for a cute little noise? Maybe not. I'm not sure. It always sends me scrambling into the bushes to see if I can find, like, a little kitten or who's back there.
It's my way of life. At about 2:30 every morning, my cat doing something like that, as if something is terribly wrong or needs to talk to me at that moment.
In this case, it's not a cat, it's the gray cat bird, which really earned its name. They sound like a cat.
Yeah. Sometimes it's that easy, unlike some things that I still can't get over when they're called a color and they're not that color for a bird.
Yes. Red-bellied woodpecker. A, you can never see the belly. They're always facing the tree. And B, like, it's barely even red. There's like a little blush to it. But no, gray catbird, it's a gray bird. Sounds like a cat.
Nice.
Good job.
Even like
Yep.
a purple finch is red, right?
Yeah, which makes no sense.
Come on, birds. Or bird labelers. I don't know who we should be mad at here. Probably not the birds. That's Charlie Mitchell. I am Heidi Holton, and you have found yourself at the Season Watch Pod. Thanks for being here. It's going to be a fun time. Kari, today on our morning show on KEXE, was just talking about the birds are still there and remembering Harry Hutchins when he would say, till mid-July, you gotta be listening because things are gonna change. And so it was fun to hear Kari remembering Harry's influence.
Absolutely. Kari is our music director and a gem. Yeah, till mid-July, things are going to change. There are a lot of little fledglings out and begging for food. Just the way that they beg is so like plaintive, especially for red-bellied woodpeckers, their babies, when they're calling and like asking to be fed and fluttering their little wings, they just sound like little Victorian era orphans, like wasting away. Mother, please feed me. I shall die. They're so dramatic. I love it.
I'm watching at our feeder the same mother-child situation with the plaintive of, and I'm trying to think if it's the smaller woodpecker. Would it be downy woodpecker or the,
Downy, probably.
yeah.
The Harrys are bigger, the Downies are the smallest.
We're at that moment where like all the geese that are pooping in our shoreline all look the same age now, but they're not. Same with these woodpeckers. They look to just be buddies, but nope, you can tell it's mother and child. And then you start seeing the feeding happening, and it's fantastic.
It is always funny with birds, though, like by the time they fledge, they're pretty much the same size as their parents. But they're so clearly inexperienced where like there's that time when they'll land on the bird feeder, but don't know how to get the food from the bird feeder into their mouth, and so they're still begging and begging their parents to feed them when the food is right there. Or they don't quite know how to land yet, and it's so funny. I'll never forget watching this group of cormorants. I assume it's a family or a number of families of double-crested cormorants. They're these water birds, kind of like loons. They've got, instead of hollow bones, they have like bones that are solid all the way through to help them like dive under. So they're a little awkward when they try to fly or even more so land. But there were all these cormorants coming in to land on this white pine tree that we had a really good view from our dock in Canada. And a bunch of them had not figured out to try to land flying into the wind so that it kind of slows you down as they tried to land on the branch. And it was just cormorant bowling. A couple of them would manage to land, finally, like have their grip on the tree, and then another one would come in and it would knock the other ones off. It was so funny to watch them try to figure it out. They got there eventually. The practice of, oh, I land on the bird feeder, my beak goes there, and now the food is in my mouth. Magic.
I think it's funny that we're talking about this, about these kind of adorable little creatures, the babies, because we get to listen to kind of the babies of the phonology program right now.
Yes,
Season Watch.
our Roots and Wings Forest School kids.
That may be smarter than us. I don't mean they're babies,
Oh,
you know.
absolutely.
Yes.
They make observations that I had no idea what was going on, and like I learn from them all the time. But they are our youngest student or youngest phonology student phonologists.
I'm just going to put a little warning out there. If you're having a bad day, this is going to cheer you up. So if you don't want to be cheered up, you maybe don't want to listen to it.
This is Kari. This is the Adventures from Roots and Wings Forest School, reporting from Grundle State Park on July 1st. I saw a stink bug. I saw a squid spider. It's also called long arm orange weaver.
What color was it?
Brown.
I saw gooseberries and they were not ripe. They were green and they were spiky.
I saw a centipede.
How many centipedes did we see?
Four.
At least.
Yeah.
Have we seen centipedes any other week on this trail?
No.
So we think that, what?
New week.
Maybe they just hatched, right?
Yeah.
Or the weather change brought them out. We're not sure, but there was lots of centipedes out there today.
Yeah. I saw a red-winged blackbird flying.
I saw a raspberry that wasn't ripe.
I saw buck tracks. I think they are bucks because they had two dots on the end of it, and they were wide apart.
I saw a black raspberry leaf.
I saw Dane's rocket. It's a flower. The petals were purple, and the how much petals? There were four petals.
I saw a hophorn beam seed on a tree.
I saw a purple leaf on the edge of the trail.
Thanks for listening. Stay wild.
I love them so much. Oh, and their observations are so good. Like, the amount of detail you need to be looking for to say, I saw a buck track. I think it was a buck track because it had the two little dots and they were far apart.
Sorry, we changed your mood by listening to it. Sorry, not sorry, I guess, right?
You're forced to be in a good mood now.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing that, you know, by connecting over nature that, you know, it can do something. It can help us learn, but honestly feel better. Like, Charlie, you and I talk via Zoom when we put together the Season Watch pod, and mm-hmm. I can hear the birds at your house right now.
Mm-hmm.
That just cheers me up.
Especially like with these student reports, they always end up saying something that makes me curious. Like this time, squid spider? What the heck is a squid spider? And so I went and looked it up, and sure enough, there's this spider. You know, spiders have four sets of legs, and it holds the front two pairs of its legs forward in front of its body, and its body is kind of like elongated like a squid's body would be. And so you see this kind of squid-shaped body with these long legs that look a little bit like tentacles. And what a perfect name.
Mm-hmm.
Squid spider. And that's like one of the classic ways that these spiders rest on objects is in this particular pose that does make them look like tiny squids.
And how are you going to feel about that? You don't love the spiders, but you'll know at least when you see a squid spider, right? And then
exactly.
Then you can scream and run away.
But yeah, even like with being uncomfortable about spiders, like that's just a level of like just whimsy of like seeing a little squid out in nature in Minnesota that I would not get without these student phenologists. It's a joy.
Speaking of that, last week we got
whimsy of the bog, maybe?
Yes.
That was a word that I stole from another student phenologist that was talking about the whimsy of the bog.
Yep. And we heard from someone at Nick Rock who offered me a walk basically in the whimsy of the bog here in Grand Rapids. Mm-hmm. And I will take her up on that. I just haven't emailed her
Excellent.
Back. I'm not going alone because one of our fellow staff members, Julia, wants to go. And so does our photographer. And, you know, everybody wants to do this now.
Oh, yes.
So we're going to see what happens. But I got to get back to
Jennifer.
Okay.
Yep.
So Jennifer, if you're listening now, thank you for that. And we'll get back to you on that.
That is delightful. I'm so glad. Jennifer was the leader of the Bell Museum camps last year and the year before. And I always just really enjoyed hearing from her what the kids were seeing. We discovered we have a shared fascination with slime molds. Do you know what's about slime molds?
I mean, a little bit. I don't quite get it. to be honest with you.
Okay. So they're not molds. They're an incredibly ancient group of animals. So from like the time that essentially like bacteria broke off from this other group that includes slime molds, archaea, they're incredibly ancient, like before multicellular organisms came along. And slime molds are just one cell that can grow to these kind of huge sizes where we can see them with the naked eye. I saw one kind of covering a pine cone. They are some of the weirdest and most beautiful forms of life in Minnesota. They come in like all these different colors where they're like the, there's a raspberry slime mold that is this like bright pink color. One called dog vomit slime mold that looks a little bit like dog vomit. There's like a multi-headed one that I found in my yard that was just like bright neon yellow. And there's another one that was neon orange. And they're just fascinating group of, are they, they'd have to be animals, yeah. But yeah, we found a shared fascination with slime molds and we're in correspondence over email about them. And it's just, this is one of the wonderful things about this program is like, I get to meet other people who love slime molds, which is not something that I generally comes up as a topic of conversation in my life, but through this program, slime mold, buddy.
I'm just imagining the green slime of what the Nickelodeon Awards or something back in the day. Oh, they were sliming each other. That's what I have in my head of some sort of thing.
Honestly, to throw it's at someone. Not far off.
Okay.
Well, go. I know what my species spotlight is going to be in this week's newsletter.
Slime molds.
Slime molds.
Yeah.
Yep.
We did hear from our engineer this week, too. And I love hearing from Steve because Steve's listening in the same way that I am and learning so much and knows that I can just tell you what I'm seeing.
Yes, please.
Hello, this is Steve in Grand Rapids. I was just calling in to report that I was walking along in the forest in the Cohasset Bovee area. And I looked down at my feet and saw many, many little frogs. Well, I guess they're toads. They were really little. They were about the size of your fingernail. That was something I'd never seen before, so I was just going to call that in.
They're so cute. Have you seen them like swarming like that before?
Mm-hmm.
And they're so tiny. My first impression, you know, I run across them like a little toadlet swarm like that, maybe once every 3 years. Mm-hmm. And my first impression is always like they're a bunch of flies because they're that small and they kind of like as a group when they're all hopping around, it kind of does look a little bit like the darty start stop motion of flies. And then you zoom in and it's just hundreds of these minuscule little toadlets. Just the size change between one of those just metamorphosed toads versus a full adult toad. After Steve sent this in, I got curious, of course, and went looking to see what the actual weight of one of those tiny fingernail-sized toadlets is. They weigh 0.05 grams. When they're an adult, hold on, I wrote it down, they weigh roughly like 50 grams. So they get 1,000 times bigger.
Wow.
If that was a human baby that got 1,000 times bigger, they would weigh as much as 4 horses. And they do that over the course of like 4 or 5 years. It's wild. But think of how many, you know, earthworms and flies and other stuff they're eating during that time. I really want to go look for baby toads now.
Well, we're going to get to, of course, our leader in nature and Tuesday morning host, John Latimer. And what stood out to you about his report this week?
He's talking about crab spiders. And I just, again, spiders, not always my favorite, but kind of like the squid spider, these crab spiders' ability to change their color just really spoke to me this week as like a little wonder of nature here in our backyard.
Another white flower that's blooming right now and really increasing every day is one called yarrow. And yarrow is 2 to 3 inch cluster of tiny white flowers. There'll be 50 flowers on a yarrow without any problem at all. And if you're careful and you look carefully among the yarrow flowers, you might find a crab spider. And once the goldenrods come out, that is an even better spot to look for the crab spider. But the goldenrod crab spider, the one that you're likely to find on yarrow or on goldenrod, can change color. It can be yellow on the goldenrod. It can be white on the yarrow. It's not like it crawls off of goldenrod and goes over to yarrow and turns white. It takes a week or more for it to actually shift its color from white to yellow or yellow to white. The other color is kind of a pale green. But this is a slow process. And scientists have actually captured these little crab spiders and forced them from say goldenrod, where they're yellow, to yarrow, where they stand out like big yellow objects on a white flower. And left to their own devices, these spiders will quickly leave the yarrow and go back to the goldenrod. But if you isolate them and force them to stay on a white flower, it takes a week to 10 days before they actually make the shift from yellow to white. They often have a pink blaze on the side of their abdomen, and that blaze remains there. I mean, they may be white with a pink blaze, they may be yellow with a pink blaze, but that pink blaze remains on their side, so it's pretty visible when you actually capture one of these. So once the goldenrods start flowering, start checking them out. In the meantime, check out the yarrow. Maybe you'll find one of these crab spiders. They're pretty cool.
They're so cool. I've found a few of these guys while, you know, examining flowers. That is the wonderful thing about getting excited about nature, I think, is if you're learning to observe flowers more closely, to identify them, all of a sudden you're also seeing the little spiders that are on there, or the pollinators, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden you get curious about those. Our membership coordinator, Heather, sent me a photo a few years ago of this weird-looking insect. It had a hunched back. It was all fuzzy, but looked kind of like the shape of a mosquito, almost, but was clearly a fly or a bee, and I discovered it was like a hunchbacked fly or something that was a pollinator. You get curious about the flowers, and all of a sudden you get curious about the insects, and all of a sudden you get curious about the insects, you get curious about the other insects that it's mimicking, and it's wonderful. But those crab spiders, one way to recognize them, if you're like looking at a flower and you're not sure if it's just a spider that happens to be on the flower or whether it's a crab spider that's hunting on the flower, crab spiders have bodies that are wider than they are long, and they hold the front three set of their legs out almost away from their body, like a little spring trap that's waiting for a fly or something to land. Funnily enough, this weekend, Heather was sending me a bunch of pictures of a crab spider that had caught a butterfly, which is, you know, kind of a shame to see because we like the butterflies. But yeah. It was just interesting timing that she sent me that photo right before John Latimer was going to talk about crab spiders.
Well, and I think it's all part and parcel because you admitted your fear of spiders last week, and it's all about the spiders now. So,
yep.
Sorry.
That's how it goes. As soon as you admit a weakness, everyone jumps in on it. But in this case, it's jumping in on it to teach me new things, and it's so fun to know we have like these little chameleons in our backyards. They don't change color as fast as chameleons, obviously, but what a cool ability.
Mm-hmm. I'd like that ability. Yeah. That'd be good. But there you go.
Yeah. And speaking of insects, our last little clip here is about insect conservation with an expert, Heather Holm.
Talk about soft landing plantings for people. What do you mean by that?
Soft landings is a concept that ties together keystone plants and then gardening for the pollinator species. So it really is putting a diverse native planting underneath the drip line, so the umbrella of a keystone tree. So for example, an oak tree, if you currently had turf grass in your yard growing under an oak, you could convert that turf grass to a diversity of low growing native plants, and those native plants would be providing flower resources. But what a soft landings is doing for some of those caterpillars, once they have consumed the oak leaves and are ready to pupate, some of them will disperse from their host plant. And so the concept of a soft landings is to provide safe habitat right under the tree for pupation to occur. Because you can imagine in a homeowner yard, a large oak tree with turf grass and not really much viable habitat nearby, the likelihood of caterpillar survival during that dispersal is quite low. So the idea is to create the habitat under the tree, which provides not only safe places for pupation, but also flowering plants for pollinators, host plants for different butterflies and moths, and all those other natural components that have shown to benefit insect diversity, such as leaf litter. So that's the idea of a soft landings planting.
Is there advice that you would give? I feel as though the soft landing idea, I've got a couple of oaks, and I have not made soft landings, but I will. And are there other ideas you can give folks for maybe increasing the likelihood of survival for a lot of these pollinators?
I think it's if you don't have a keystone tree to do a soft landings planting under, just converting any small part of your lawn into a diverse planting of, you can start with just a perennial planting, making sure that you have a variety of different plants blooming throughout the growing season. So I call that having the restaurant open 24/7 and a variety of different flower colors and shapes. So we just talked about how butterflies like flat, platform-like flowers, but other pollinating species like more complexly shaped flowers. So having that real diversity and variety as you plan a pollinator garden. So that would be equally important if you don't have a place for a soft landings planting.
Keep the restaurant open.
Keep the restaurant open, yep. I love that concept, and it does break my heart to think of, you know, these, because I've been really enjoying seeing these moths tip-tapping at my windows at night. They're really big ones, like the Polyphemus moths and stuff. And just the idea of, like, those little larva or pupa getting run over by a lawnmower hurts my heart. It's just a win-win-win. You get to do less mowing. You get beautiful wildflowers.
Right.
And you're helping the pollinators.
We were listening to Heather Holmes. She was a guest this week. She's a pollinator conservationist, and she's written a whole bunch of books, including Pollinators of Native Plants, Bees, Wasps, Common Native Bees of the Eastern United States. And wow, she knows a lot. We had talked to her before, and we were so glad to have her back.
Yeah, I got to meet her once, and it was very much a fangirl moment for me.
I love that.
She's so cool. Yeah. I also wanted to mention, this was when I lived in an apartment, it was always, I was always aware that so many of these things you can do for conservation require you to own a home or own land,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, be able to make a soft landing. And what I did when I was in that situation was on my dog walks, you know, there's so much like just sidewalk land that's not really owned by anyone or just backed up by a forest. And I would do the potentially frowned upon practice of guerrilla gardening, where I would pull out all the invasives and like sprinkle some seeds there. And was it my land? No. Was anyone maintaining it? No. And that helped kind of scratch that itch for me.
Do you know that children's book, Miss Rumphius?
No.
So Miss Rumphius, everywhere she went, put seeds down, lupin mm-hmm. seeds, and so then left a trail of lupine or lupin, however you might say it, mm-hmm. these beautiful purple flowers. And it's just it's a glorious thing of like wanting to leave behind something, make the world more beautiful. she becomes known as this lupine lady. And it was, of course, inspired by a real person. And mm-hmm. it's a beautifully illustrated book as well. But it really makes you realize that, yeah, you could do that. That's what you were doing in the yep. sidewalk.
You don't need to wait for permission. You know, pick up some trash, mm-hmm. pull some invasive species, plant some new ones. I think it's a good thing to do.
Yeah, for sure. Can you believe it? We're almost at the end of this week's Season Watch Pod.
Time flies, man. Especially in summer. There's so much to talk about. And it's just good to be out and good to be talking about it. And this week, we have a bunch of people to thank. The Gray Catbird recording was from Jonathan Youngsma, Roots and Wings Forest School. Of course, from our friends at New York Mills. Their teacher is Leona Sitchie. Steve for our SpeakPipe message, John Latimer, and Heather Holm were both on the morning show at KEXE.
And special thank you to our producer, Mark Jacobs. He produced that segment with Heather and does Thanks. That for us to help us, leads us in these conversations. It all comes together with the help of each other, and it's an amazing thing, whether you're listening to Season Watch podcast, you're getting the Season Watch newsletter, you're listening to the KEXE morning show. Any number of things that are coming from this place that is mm-hmm. building community in the world, especially Northern Minnesota.
I love that it's all supported by people in the community as well. We're serving this community and we're also served by. It's a very, you know, I'm always thinking in terms of nature. It's a mm-hmm. very mutualist, reciprocal relationship.
Don't forget to leave us a SpeakPipe message having to do with what you are seeing in nature. Check out kexe.org, look for shows and Season Watch, or check your podcast platform. Well, until next week, we need to keep watching and keep listening, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I look forward to it.
Support for Season Watch podcast comes from the Sugar Lake Lodge near Grand Rapids, a Northwoods setting on the shores of Sugar Lake, offering lodge rooms, cabins, and golf villas, with on-site dining, a golf course, and access to the lake, trails, and seasonal outdoor recreation throughout the year. Plan your stay at sugarlakelodge.com.